Thank you for listening to the Jason Greger Show podcast, brought to you by Lakewood Chev. It's Upgrader Month right now. You can upgrade to a new or a previously owned vehicle. You'll be entered in to win the two VIP load seats to a playoff game. First time in 11 years. All that at Lakewood Chev. And they got a barbecue special this Friday and Saturday.
Thoughts on Connor McDavid's first period last night?
Well, it was unbelievable. It was next level. It was, he just absolutely controlled everything. It was just dazzling with his speed, his stick handling, the number of chances he created, the quality of players. He was walking around at will. Like it was as high end a period of hockey as I've seen from a guy at the NHL level, just in terms of elevating himself above almost everybody else out there. It was pretty unreal. So I don't know. You can't really say enough about it. It was just, when he really puts his foot on it, he goes to an entirely different hemisphere.
Oh, it's amazing. And, you know, Adam Oates was talking about it. He says it's kind of amazing when you have certain players in the league that are just that much better. And he brought up Paul Coffey, and he said at times Coffey would come around the net, and then Coffey would just take off, and guys would be like, seriously? Like Drew Doughty yelling at McDavid last night, like basically screw off, I thought was some of the best pure comedy I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah, no, and Doughty's the kind of guy that would be, you know, he'd be rattled by that. But, I mean, he's competitive, right? And Doughty is one of the few defensemen out there who has the skill set to contain McDavid, like the mobility that you would need. And he was just caught off guard. Connor was just walking around him. So, I mean, I talked about it a little bit this morning. I've seen Sidney Crosby on a number of really big stages. So, you know, Olympics, Stanley Cup finals, different playoff series. When he ramps it up, how much better he is than everybody else. And when he really gets it, shifts it into another gear, how dominant he could be. McDavid took it to a higher level. It's different the way Connor did it last night than the way Sid does it. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty unreal. And if he learns how to harness that and to bring that, if that's going to be his relative level at playoff time, man, it'll be fun to watch.
Do you think that after players play against him, like a Doughty, that they are able to get more prepared or will be able to get more prepared to deal with it?
I have no idea. I mean, maybe. I mean, I guess maybe he... the only thing I can think of is it was an off performance from Doughty. And when Doughty is really dialed in and really engaged, I don't think Connor's necessarily going to be able to run around on him like that. I think it was an off night for Doughty where he was unprepared. There are some guys that are never going to be able to do anything about it. McDavid's going to come at him full speed, and there's going to be nothing they can do. They simply don't have the devices to do it. Doughty does. So I don't think Doughty will get caught sleeping necessarily again like that against Connor. Teams must watch tape on him. They must watch the highlights. They must see. I mean, if anything else, what we've seen defensemen do is literally just when he gets the puck, they just turn around and start skating as fast as they can in the other direction to try and buy themselves some room. I don't know what you do, Cass. Like, you just kind of do the best you can and try, I guess, your D-man, control your gap, and just try not to look foolish.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it usually was like try to squirt water bottle at the guys. He's blown by the bench because I'm sitting there collecting dust.
A little dust in the eyes or just some sort of trick, right? But, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know how – when he gets going like that, I just don't know how you contain him. I think you obviously have to back off and not let him beat you wide with his speed, but then all of a sudden you give him all kinds of room to make dazzling plays in the high slot. So it's kind of a no-win situation. So, I mean, it's going to take – if he can even get close to that level with consistency in the playoffs, it's going to take a world-class defenseman to handle him. It's going to take a sensational defenseman to handle him. And, you know, there aren't many out there that can do it. Doughty should be one of them.
Now, the Edmonton Oilers are in a unique situation suddenly because of Leon Draisaitl's 9 points in four games. Four games ago, it didn't look like it was going to be an issue. But now his B bonus could potentially put the Oilers around $1 million in bonus overages for next year. So if the cap's $74 million, then they would be at about $73 million. Now he's not going to finish top 10 in goals or points per game. I was looking at it amongst forwards. It's like he's he's too far down the list to jump that many guys, you know, unless he just goes on some ridiculous goal run that no one expects. But assists and points are right there. It's not a major issue. It's a minor one. But I tell you, if he's still there with three or four games to go, you know his teammates are going to be looking to help him win that, because that's a massive bonus.
Oh, yeah. We've seen it over the years. Like, who was it that kept going on the monster shifts trying to get his bonus? Was it Comrie, maybe? I can't remember who it was. But yeah, we've seen players chasing bonuses before. I'm not saying Leon will do that. But the team certainly is aware of those sorts of things. I would assume, Cass, you've been in the rooms. I can imagine they would talk about it a certain amount, and it's maybe a bit of a joke. But guys will try and get them there. It's like when you throw a guy on with the net empty when he's got two goals, right? Everybody tries to funnel the puck to him to get the hat trick. I think that they'll try, but it's been a great season for Draisaitl. I think the Oilers will happily pay every penny of that contract based on the production they've gotten out of him. It creates a little bit of a puzzle for what to do long-term with him, because it's going to be a long-term deal. And, the number is probably going to be pretty high. So they've got longer-term issues in sorting out Draisaitl's contract and how it combines with McDavid's and what that looks like. So they got some bigger problems in the next couple of years here.
Yeah, it'll be interesting what Draisaitl's contract is going to be coming up next season. You got to think he's a $6 million player.
Yeah, well, I mean, look at, I don't know, if you look at players that you can maybe try and compare him to, or other deals you can sort of eyeball. I mean, what did Scheifele sign for? You know, it wouldn't be out of the realms of possibility, I'd guess, for it to be kind of in that range somewhere. You know, that might be a comparable. I'm just sort of spitballing.
Scheifele's like 6.125, right? Monahan was over 6.
Yeah.
Right, he was 6.3, I think it was. Gaudreau was 6.7.
Yeah. So, I mean, there you go, right? Like, that's kind of right.
I think he's
range.
Over 6 and, for sure, yeah.
Yeah, and it just depends. Yeah, just depends what kind of negotiating they do and how it looks, how many years of unrestricted free agency they can buy off of them. But it's an important deal for the Oilers. Their previous long-term deals right out of entry level haven't gone great. I mean, they really haven't. You can make the argument that of all of those, three of those players, Taylor Hall was really the only one that was able to justify the contract that he got. And they don't want to make that mistake again, I'm sure. But Draisaitl's on a little bit of a different level in my eyes. So, a long-term deal is probably going to have to get done. And it's just mitigating the damage of the number and what it looks like.
What do you think they're going to have to do with one of those two contracts that aren't Taylor Hall that's left with Ryan Nugent-Hopkins and Jordan Eberle?
Yeah, good question. I mean, I think that they want to wait and see what Eberle gives them in the postseason here. I think there was probably some opportunities to trade him, but at a low point in his value. So I think they're interested to see what he can bring in the postseason. If Eberle has a good postseason and contributes and can elevate his level, and looks like the problem with moving Eberle is that until Puljujarvi is really, truly ready to be a consistent producer, they've got no producing right wingers. I mean, the minute they trade Jordan Eberle, they're looking for a top six right winger. And while they might not love the number, I mean, Eberle has produced in this league. And if this was just an off year for him, they might be throwing the baby out with the bathwater and trading him, especially if his value is low. So I think they're going to wait and see on Eberle, let this year play out, let these playoffs play out. Nugent Hopkins has been a little bit more of an issue. I mean, if Puljujärvi is close to being ready and he ends up being the long-term fit next to McDavid, and Draisaitl is going to be a center with this organization, and who knows? I mean, who knows which way it'll go? Then they don't necessarily need a $6 million third-line center, and that's something that might have to be addressed. But they've got a little bit of time, because they do have to wait for Puljujärvi a little bit here.
Yeah, I definitely think there's some patience there, no doubt. Now, tomorrow night, the Anaheim Ducks and the Edmonton Oilers, a huge game. Flames currently taking on the Washington Capitals tonight, and no score in the first 7 minutes. The Capitals just scored. It's now 1-0. Well, just as we were about to speak. So there, the Caps are up 1-0 in that one over the Flames. I think it was a 4-on-4 goal.
if the Oilers get up 2-0 tomorrow night, does Maroon have to fight Bieksa? Is that just a given? Is that just he's got to take that fight?
Oh, gee, really?
No, okay.
Really?
The thing is, here's the difference. Here is the absolute difference. Is Bieksa is an absolute spot picker?
Yeah.
And a weasel that I would, you know, well, not off the ice, but on the ice because he drove me nuts. Would love to, you know, put a glove or a few knuckles in his face where. Jerome Iginla is in a completely different level.
All right, we'll take your pick then. So then Getzlaf then. Let's say Getzlaf tries to get up goes. You got to take that.
Sure. You think you want to take Getzlaf off the ice for 5 minutes?
If Getzlaf wants to go with Maroon, I think for sure you're going to
take
do
that trade.
Yeah, I don't think there's any. And here's the thing, going back to the Maroon thing last night. First of all, he showed that he's not just going to fight everyone. He didn't fight Char the game against Boston. And then when he fought McQuaid, it's because McQuaid hammered him from behind and he was livid.
Right.
Right. Now, in that game against L.A. last night. Sure, Iginla might have initiated, but nothing happened. Then in the penalty box, they kept yapping at each other, and I think Maroon's like, yeah, okay, I'm not backing down. I'm going to go. And I just think, to me, for this team, I thought that was a big thing to note, and it was a great tilt. It was a long scrap.
I think
the guys respect it, and you know what? Tomorrow's a playoff game for a lot of intents and purposes, battling for second place, and if you can send a message again to Anaheim, and if that means Maroon's fighting one of their guys, because Iginla still played. I looked amongst their forwards. I think it was sixth or seventh. So he's a top, you know, two-line guy. They're not a good team, but right?
Like, Gregor, if they suited you up and put you out there with Kopitar for a game, are you a second-line NHL player?
No, but I don't have 600 and some goals.
I know, but what I'm saying is this idea that it's a fair trade-off, I'm not buying it.
Yeah, but it's not always a fair trade-off.
I have so much respect for Jerome. I played with Iginla.
Every fight shouldn't be about trade-offs. Yes, Maroon has 25 goals. He doesn't even have 40 points.
Yeah, but listen, the only issue I have is that I think Patrick Maroon has earned himself enough respect and enough credibility around the league that he can pick his spot a little bit. He is not obliged to green light every challenger that comes along that needs to get his team going. He doesn't have to do that. Now, the fights that happen, like the McQuaid fight, where it's in the flow of play and a hit happens and he's pissed off and he reacts or he's sticking up for a teammate, I mean, that's all good. That's all well and good. But he admitted after the game, like, he knew exactly what I was asking him and exactly what I was questioning him about, and he kind of agreed that maybe it wasn't the best spot to pick. He's allowed to pick his spots when he's going to give a guy a fight. And like, Cass, you know the difference between something happening in play versus, yeah, you're going to, you know what? It's not a smart thing for me to do for my team, but I respect that guy and I'm going to give him a fight because one day he might give me one when I need it. And I'm saying Maroon doesn't have to do that in that situation.
No, he probably doesn't have to. I think there was some emotional buildup. I mean, you saw them going at each other earlier, and listen, it's not like I would want him to do that every single time it happened and against Jerome Iginla all the time, but I think given the situation, given the game, I still have no problem with it. Now, down the stretch, he's got to really pick his spots.
Well,
doesn't need to be
stretch,
doing it.
And
yeah, we are.
And my point is he should be picking his spots.
Yeah, but
they're in the stretch, and he should be picking his spots. And while I respect the hell out of him for doing it and think it's gutsy and tough and I think his teammates love him, and all of those things, I don't think that's a fight that he needs to take.
Yeah, well, I look at the Oilers. The Oilers haven't secured anything in the playoffs. They're battling for home ice. They're down the stretch. They're facing a team that they basically eliminated from playoff contention last night in L.A. They're playing Anaheim. I don't expect them to fight anybody in Colorado for sure. But if it's Anaheim, to me, it doesn't matter who he's fighting in games like that. Because Maroon, yeah, he's a valuable part of your team. He's still a complimentary player on the Edmonton Oilers. I know he's a well-loved guy in the team and everything, but he's not a driver of the line. And for the two shifts that he'll miss in the 5 minutes, I don't think it's a difference maker.
It's not so much about missing the I mean, it's not so much about the even that game. Like, he's up 2-0. He's playing extremely well. He doesn't need to get himself going. He doesn't need to get his team going. This was strictly 100% about nothing other than Patrick Maroon respecting Jerome Iginla and throwing a veteran guy a fight. That's all this was. And I don't think it was necessary.
Didn't hurt them. Didn't hurt the team. They won.
Well, You know How many did he fire into his helmet?
Oh, like, yeah, sure. His hands are probably sore. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
A crack knuckle, a busted finger, whatever, and those soft hands that we talk about with Patrick Maroon are unavailable for 2 or 3 weeks, and that would be, you know. So, listen, if it happens in the flow of play, sure, but I mean, I just feel like 25 goals playing on one of the best lines in the league right now, you're probably okay to beg a few guys off. I don't think anyone's going to cast a sideways glance at him. And guys, I think Maroon agrees with me. I really like, if you listen to his post game comments.
Yeah, but the coach disagreed with you.
He has, like Greg said with Chara, he has pulled guys off and not done it. So.
Oh, but he already did it with Chara. He had done it the last time they played. He's not doing it again. I mean, that would just be silliness at that point to be doing it twice. I mean, he didn't know Chara anything. I mean, the first time around, I get it. But Chara comes to him again. It's like, hey, you know what? Have you met Eric Greiba? Go meet him. There you go. You know what? Like, I've kind of done my thing with you. But like, and Greg's, as far as Todd McLellan goes, I knew what the answer was going to be before I asked the question. Todd is not going to do anything to remove the spark from under Patrick Maroon's butt right now. He likes that in his player. He likes to see it now. Behind closed doors, do you think Todd McLellan is thinking, probably would rather he not have risked his hands with that fight in a 2-0 game we were leading? Yeah, I would bet dollars to donuts that's Todd McClellan's gut feeling when the doors are closed.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't see it being a big issue. I think Edmonton's a team that still thrives on emotion, and they've been a team that, you're up 2-0.
But they didn't need emotion in that game. They came out with a pile of emotion. They came out with a ton of emotion, a ton of
Yeah, but it was
jump.
In the
they
second period
great.
Now. It was in the second period when the fight occurred.
Right, but they're up 2-0, and things were going their way. So this wasn't about Maroon needing to spark any emotion. This wasn't about continuing some sort of any. This was,
but
this
did
was just Patrick Maroon respecting Jerome Iginla and giving him a fight.
Do you think Patrick Maroon's a better player when he's emotionally engaged and ready to fight anybody?
Yeah, for sure.
Then why do we just want to jump all over him for this?
I'm not jumping all over him.
No, you're trying to run him out of town is basically what I've understood from this conversation.
This is a nuanced debate, you guys. This is not about should he ever fight, should he not. And anybody that wants to boil it down to something as simple as me saying Patrick Maroon should never fight, I'm the first guy that says when he's playing bad, that guy needs to drop his gloves and get himself involved. It's a nuanced argument, and it's about the fine details of the fighting game and when not to do it. And I'm not saying that he did anything wrong necessarily, or that I'm not even criticizing him. I don't think Patrick Maroon is giving himself enough credit in realizing you don't have to do that, Patrick. You're 25 goal scorer, left winger on one of the best lines in the game. You don't have to take that fight. But it's because he's such an honest guy and an honest player that he kind of feels obliged to. And I respect the heck out of him for that. But somebody probably could say to him, you don't need to. You'd be okay. You're well-respected enough, and you don't need to take that fight.
Chara, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks, boys.